I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto.
Good evening, Bash on Island. I am Megan Hastings, and this is the Cats and Jammer Follies. It's a travel story show. And today, we happen to have on a good friend of mine. His name is Doug Pine. He is someone who, beside being a local famous musician with such bands as Tim Couldn't Make It and Doug...
Allison Shirk Band.
Thank you for that cue. I appreciate that. He also was a tugboat captain for many, many years. That's not such a random thing to get into and to have as your profession. Can you just give me just a little bit of background about how you got into that, how you got started in that?
Well, how I got started goes all the way back till I was about 20 years old on Maui, and I was working at McDonald's and met a girl, and she...
Cute as can be.
She invited me out on this charter boat that she worked on that takes tourists out snorkeling. So I went out.
Sounds romantic.
It was pretty fun.
Yeah, bet.
So I went out for the day, went snorkeling and hung out and drank beer and had a sandwich and thought, this is a lot more fun than McDonald's.
I would say so.
So I went up to the wheelhouse on the way back and I begged the captain for a job, and he just laughed at me. He said, dude, I got a stack of applications about an inch tall, people that want to work on this boat.
Of course, especially in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Come on.
And I was like, okay. Well, we got back to the harbor, and I was sitting there on the boat waiting for this girl to finish up her duties, and I heard the captain yelling at this other deckhand, get out of here, you're fired. I don't know what the kid did, but...
And he came, and you were up like, opportunity.
He came up to me and he said, are you serious about that job? And I said, yeah. And he handed me a deck brush and said, get busy.
Nice. And, oh, that love when stuff like that works
out.
Yeah.
And that turned into 12 years going back and forth between Mauna Harbor and Molokini on Maui.
On the same boat.
No, different boats.
Yeah.
I got my first captain's license in 86, and then as time went on, I got pretty tired of going back and forth between the harbor and Molokini, and a friend of mine worked on tugboats in Hawaii, and he kept saying, you really should come and work on these tugboats, and it was very difficult. I had to go to school. I had to bang on doors and beg for work, and finally, I got a job on a tugboat.
And for those people that aren't so schooled in the world of the marine mariner's life, will you explain exactly what a tugboat is and does?
Well, a tugboat, there's different types of tugboats, but the ones that I originally worked on, they're called wire boats. And they're a big boat, and they have a big, what's called a tow winch on deck. And from that winch is a big two and a quarter inch wire that goes out to a barge, and you tow barges around. And the tugs that I was working on in Hawaii towed everything, containers, diesel, gasoline, jet fuel, propane, sand and gravel,
wow,
cement.
That's heavy duty.
You name it. And it all comes to Honolulu, and then tugs take it out to the neighbor islands. And so We towed just about anything and everything.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, as we have been, Doug and I have been talking about him coming on and doing this show for about the last 6 weeks, and for whatever reason, it's never worked out. And even today, he sent a text and said, I can't make the show. We have to reschedule. My car won't start. And so this is sort of a prelude to what the story is. Doug, we've all been looking forward to this.
Yeah.
Please take it away.
And it, yeah, there's a story that, a sea story that I have of a tugboat that I was the captain on that sank in the Bering Sea. And you asked me a while ago to come on the
I
show
did,
and tell
yeah.
a story. And one of the cool things about being asked to do this is it gave me a chance to kind of just sit down and ponder and actually write the story down, because I've never written the story down. It's always been a case where somebody will say, hey, I heard you were on Tugboat that sank. Tell me the story. And it's just like, you know, improvising.
Yeah, sure.
And so today I'm going to have an opportunity to kind of read the story that I told about it. And so here we go.
Thank you for taking the time to do this.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. June 10th, 2011, started with a phone call. The owner of a mom-and-pop tugboat company, Kevin Kennedy, called asking if I might be available as captain for a month-long job in Alaska, towing a barge from Seward to Dutch Harbor and then on to Nome. The reason being, the original captain had suddenly died. It's not funny, but it goes with the story. The tug and barge were tied up in Seward waiting for a captain. My wife, Kathy, and I discussed it and decided I'd do it. I called Kevin back and said I'd take the job. 36 hours later, I arrived in Anchorage, and Kevin drove me to Seward to meet the boat. I learned that the deceased captain had fallen from the dock to the tug and hit his head on the cap rail. The crew were traumatized. The mate chose to leave with Kevin, and the rest, an engineer and a deckhand, chose to stay on. Kevin had to find another mate before we could sail. And while he was trying to find a mate, I got to know the crew and the boat. It was a small tug designed to push barges about 85 feet in length. It had spent most of its life running up and down the Columbia River. It had a tow winch on the stern for towing barges. Kevin and his business partner had bought it to put it to work up on a river in Alaska to support an airport building project. It was old and tired, but seaworthy, I was told. My own inspection bore that out at the time, as I found nothing of concern. The engineer and deckhand were young and inexperienced. Neither had sailed on ocean waters. The deckhand, who held an inland mate's license, had never before worked on a tug, but they were competent and eager to do a professional job. Kevin showed up 2 days later with a mate that he had found in San Francisco. Reputation means everything in this business, and this mate had no reputation that I could find. I checked. None of my friends and colleagues knew who he was, but he had a license, he had tugboat experience, and he was available to do the trip from Seward to Dutch Harbor. He turned out to be an unprofessional idiot who, when on watch, told the deckhand that while I was asleep, he was the captain, and she had to follow his orders even if they opposed my own. For example, one night we were in very rough weather, and I had told the deckhand to stay inside and not do her outside rounds on deck. He made her do them anyway. I told her to wake me up in the future if he put her safety in jeopardy. You'd better believe that he and I had a little, let's call it, teaching moment. She nicknamed him Bumbles, as he was a dangerous idiot. For the most part, the trip to Dutch was uneventful. Some of the calmest water and most beautiful scenery I'd ever seen. We handed off our barge to another tug outside the village of Chignik and made the rest of the trip light boat. Light boat means you're not towing anything. Our arrival at Dutch was uneventful. Happily, we sent Bumbles packing. The next morning, the Coast Guard ordered all vessels to leave the harbor due to a tsunami warning. We hauled ass out of there and headed north at top speed, which is about 10 knots. And just as a precaution, we donned our immersion suits. This practice would serve us well soon. Next day, another mate showed up. Drew was a captain with more towing experience than I had. On our arrival at Nome, he was going to take over as captain. His years of experience would very soon pay off. The barge we were going to tow to Nome was on a mooring in Captain's Bay just west of Dutch Harbor. On a beautiful Thursday afternoon, we headed over and made up to the barge, did a barge inspection, and made tow. At about 1 a.m. the next day, we cast off the mooring and departed. It was flat calm with not a breath of wind. All day Friday, it was glassy with some patchy fog. It was beautiful. We did a fire and man overboard drills and settled into our watches. It was so nice to have Drew on board after the idiot. The engineer and deckhand were both great cooks. The boat was running well. The barge was behaving nicely, and all was well until, as they say, it wasn't. The Bering Sea seldom remains calm for long. This being summer, the forecast was not terrible, though. The winds kicked up to about 30 knots from the southeast, and the swell grew to about 8 to 10 feet. The wind and swell were on our starboard quarter, so the ride was quite comfortable, like being rocked in a cradle. Saturday, we did an abandoned ship drill. We donned our immersion suits again and discussed what options we had if we began taking on water. Option number one was to get to the barge and climb aboard. Option number two was to throw the inflatable life raft over and climb into it. Now, I cannot imagine a worse place to be than in an inflatable life raft at sea. Everybody gets seasick, and the raft quickly fills with seawater and with the products of seasickness. Life rafts are horrible and awful, but they do save lives. Sunday morning, June 26th, I woke up around 5:15 in the morning, got ready to take my 6 to noon watch. At 5:45, I went up to the wheelhouse and relieved Drew. All was well, he said, and headed off to bed. The boat was rocking like a cradle still, rolling from port to starboard comfortably, until, while rolling to starboard, it didn't come back. It stayed there, heeled over. This was one of the strangest moments on a boat I had ever experienced. They're not supposed to do that. After my startle response wore off, I rang the general alarm and Drew came rushing up to the pilot house. I told him what was happening, and he looked out the starboard hatch. "Cap, we're sinking," he said after taking a look astern. By this time, the rest of the crew was in the pilot house. "Let's get suited up," I said, and we're headed for the barge. At 6:11, I grabbed the single sideband microphone and made a mayday call.
"Mayday, mayday, mayday. The Tug Aries, Whiskey Delta Foxtrot, 8193. At position 564634 North, 167.2041 West. Listing severely to starboard. Blunt barge in tow.
Delta Foxtrot 8193, this is Comstay Kodiak. I copied position 5646.34 North, 167.20.41 West. Request number of persons on board and nature of distress, over.
I say again, my position 5646.36 North, 167.20.44 rear list to starboard. Attempts to pump ballast and move fuel have been so far unsuccessful. We're listing approximately 25 degrees to starboard. Over.
I then placed a call to the owner on the satellite phone and told Kevin we were sinking and I'd get back to him. He now had the horrible task of calling all of our families. There's nothing worse than being the loved ones of a mariner in distress at sea. Nothing. The mariner knows exactly what's going on. The families and loved ones have not a clue, sometimes for hours, maybe days. In our case, it was nearly 20 hours before the families got word that we were all safe. It was a struggle getting to the barge. It took every bit of ship handling experience that I had. The sea state made it difficult. Fighting the weight of the tow wire made it more difficult. The tug was listing now to about 20 to 30 degrees. That made it difficult as the portside propeller couldn't grab as much water. But we got alongside the barge and the crew made it across. None of them even got wet. What a relief it was for me to see them safely on board the barge. I had a problem now. In order to get to the barge, I would have to take the engines out of gear. If I had to go overboard, I might get chewed up by spinning propellers. But if I took the engines out of gear, the tug would drift away from the barge. So I assumed I'd be swimming in 36-degree water. It would be impossible to get to the barge once in the water. But it's a quick death and it doesn't hurt all that much. I pulled the throttles to all stop. I climbed out on the port side hatch, which was quite a struggle in an immersion suit with about 35 degrees of list on. The tug could capsize at any moment. I tossed a life ring into the water while on my way down to the main deck. The tug was slowly drifting away from the barge. My crew was standing there helpless. I stood there helpless. I thought of my son. And I thought of Kathy. And then suddenly a big wave smacked the tug up against the barge. I climbed up onto the cap rail. I took a deep breath and jumped, grabbing a cleat on the barge. I hung there while the crew rushed over and hauled me on board. I was safe. We were safe. In the midst of hugs and tears, I noticed that I had my iPhone in my shirt pocket. I got it out and started shooting video. We all stood there and watched the tug drifting away, and 20 minutes later, it sank. Later on, my son, Drew, gathered up what I shot that day and put together a YouTube video that's often played now in classes at maritime schools as an example of how to do it right. The water was only a couple hundred feet deep, so the tug became an anchor. The barge fetched up on the wire and rode very comfortably. This made it very easy for the Coast Guard to find us hours later, as our EPIRB, which is a emergency position indicating radio beacon, it flashes your position to satellites, but it was drifting away, but we were staying in place. That EPIRB was drifting off towards Russia. They used the original position I had given them during the Mayday call, and we were still right there. There were fire trucks on the barge, not fire trucks, just regular old trucks with full gas tanks. We hopped in the trucks and cranked up the heaters and were quite comfortable. One of the trucks had an OnStar button, and I pushed it thinking it would make a great OnStar commercial if it actually worked from out there. It's important to keep a good sense of humor in these situations, and of course it didn't work. One of the trucks had an aviation handheld radio in it. With this radio, I was able to speak to the Coast Guard C-130 when it showed up, and then again several hours later when the helicopter showed up. Once the helicopter arrived, we were hauled up one by one, and were flown to St. Paul Island, about 100 miles to the northwest. We got medical checkups. We pissed in cups for drug tests, and we're taken to the Trident Fishing Company fish camp where they provided food and lodging. The people of St. Paul Island, who are used to hosting rescued mariners, turned out with clothing and jackets and shoes. We had nothing. We were on St. Paul for 2 days waiting for the weather to calm down enough that we could fly to Anchorage for the investigation and then on to our respective homes. We survived a sinking in the Bering Sea. This seldom happens. It's a brutal sea, and lives are lost there every year. The ocean wants to kill you. You'd best approach a killer well-prepared or you're doomed. We are professionals, and we were prepared, and on that day, we spit in the ocean's eye.
Wow. That is so... Thank you. That is so beautifully written. And Doug, may I say, you are one hell of a badass. I don't even understand how you figured that out to get out of that situation. I literally feel sick to my stomach.
Training, drills.
It's more than training. It is also who you are. It says miles of who you are as a human, Doug.
Thank you.
It's amazing that you're here.
Yeah. And I wasn't ready for the impact that reading that had on me emotionally. I'm sitting here in tears.
I know. I see that.
I've never cried before when I told that story. But yeah, we made it.
I'm gonna come and give Doug a hug right now, people. Hold on.
We now pause for this Megan and Doug hug.
Vashon is it's a better place with you in it. And I personally can say that as I see you most days that Snapdragon is open. And you always put a smile on my face.
Oh, thank
and I'd be
you.
Really sad had I not gotten to know you.
Yeah. Yeah, because we didn't know each other well at all.
Mm-mm.
That was 2011.
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Almost like it was June 26th. What's today's date? Like the 28th or something?
June 30th.
The 30th. So it's 4 days after that.
Wow.
And
it's been 11 years.
11 years.
Yeah.
That's crazy timing. I guess it was we were supposed to cancel all those other times.
Yeah.
Doug, I heard that you have a song for us.
I do have a song. It's a Vashon song. And I'd be happy to play and sing it for you.
I'd be happy to hear it.
This song is called "Oh Lord, I Just Bought a Tractor." And this song is about a guy who lives here on Vashon Island who we all know and love, Mike Nichols.
We do know and love him.
Yeah. And one day, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, we were sitting around outside at Snapdragon, bunch of us, and Mike came up and he was literally jumping up and down. He was so excited. We're like, "Mike, what's going on?" He goes, "I just bought a tractor, man. I'm so, you need any work done? I'll come, I'll do some work for him." I mean, he was just over the moon.
I could see that happening.
Bought a tractor. And I sat there and I thought to myself, this is so cool. What if the rapture happened tomorrow before Mike got to use his tractor? And I went down, I went home and I wrote down the words and I couldn't find any music that went along with the words. And so I just kind of tossed it for a while. And one day Rick Doms, my musical partner, and Tim Couldn't Make It, said, "Whatever happened to that tractor song you were working on?" I said, "I can't find any music." He goes, "Give it to me." So Rick came up with some music. So I wrote the words, Rick wrote the music. And this is how it goes. That's not how it goes.
Yeah.
Well, my preacher said the Lord will be here Thursday, and I wonder what that's gonna mean for me. If he could only wait until next Sunday, I'd still have time to go pick up that key. Well, I got a big old place down in Frog Holler. There's holes to fill, so many stumps to dig. I'll make it nice so I don't live in squalor. Please, Lord, give me time to use my rig. Hold on, Lord, I just bought a tractor. You picked a real bad time to come for me. Your timing, Lord, it really is a factor. Lord, will you wait another week or three? Please pick another time, Lord, for your comeback. Your timing, Lord, it has me asking why. That brand new tractor that you see right out back, if I don't get to use it, Lord, I'll die. Hold on, Lord, I just bought a tractor. You picked a real bad time to come for me. Your timing, Lord, it really is a factor. Lord, will you wait another week or three for me?
Doug, that's really beautiful. Thank you.
You're welcome. Love you, Mike.
I love you too, Mike. I love you too, Dougie.
I love you, Megan.
This is Megan Hastings, and this has been the Cats and Jammer Follies. See you next time somewhere in this big bad world of ours. This is Voice of Ashon, 101.9 KVSH.
I've been everywhere.